Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and I want to talk about one of the most important subjects for anybody who wants to be rich. And that subject is how do you find a great investment? As some of you know, there's different types of investments for different types of people. Like some people think saving money is a great investment, so you put money in the bank. Now, for most people with very limited financial training, that's really a smart investment for them. You know, you put in, let's say, $100,000 and the bank pays you 2%. Now, you may think that's exciting, but why would somebody put their money in the bank? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Another type of investment is turn their money over to a fund manager, and maybe they might make a whopping 5%, maybe 10%, and some people tell you that's good. So the average person has heard from many so-called financial experts that the way to get rich is get out of debt, cut up your credit cards, save money, put your money in a mutual fund, invest for the long term, buy, hold, and pray. And for people with limited financial training, that is excellent, excellent advice. But personally, I would not want to follow that advice. Instead, my rich dad trained me how to find great investments. And it's not that hard if you're willing to put in the time and effort and, you know, gain some experience in it. So today with me in the studio are my two partners, Sharon Lechter and my wife, Kim Kiyosaki. And what we're going to be talking about is how to find great investments. Kim's specialty is primarily in the area of real estate. Sharon's specialty is primarily in the area of businesses, or how to read a corporate financial statement so that you can tell whether the stock is good or bad, whether it's about to take off, or is a company about to go bankrupt. So Sharon, you want to say hello and tell us what you're going to be talking about?
Thank you, Robert. I think when we talk about financial statements, no matter what the investment is, you talk about businesses, real estate, or paper investments, they all have a financial statement related to it, and it's understanding how to read the numbers. You've said it before, the numbers tell a story. So it's how do you read the numbers, how do you find out the story, and how do you find the real story behind the numbers? And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
And that's why Rich Dad's game, Cashflow 101 and Cashflow 202, plus the electronic versions of the game, is so important, is because those are the only games that teach you how to read a financial statement. And if you cannot read your financial statement, you cannot tell the story as being financially illiterate. So Rich Dad's game is the focus on learning how to be financially literate. In other words, how to read the financial statements so you get the full story.
You're absolutely right, Robert. By playing the game, not only are you learning how a cash flow statement works, but you're actually learning the difference between assets, liabilities, income, and expenses, and how every decision you make impacts each of those categories. And so when you're going and playing the game, you're actually having fun. You make a decision, and then you see how it flows through the financial statement and how it helps you get a little closer to building your passive income so you can get out of the rat race.
So what you're saying that is when investing in a company or a stock, the process is very similar, except the vocabulary or the words used could be different.
Absolutely. And again, when you're looking at the financial statements of a company, you also take into consideration how much control you have over that financial statement.
Right. So the principles are the same. For example, in paper assets, you use the word PE, price earnings ratio. In real estate, it's cap rate. They mean very similar things, but they're words or vocabulary pertaining to one industry, either real estate or stocks or businesses.
And they're one factor of many factors that you have to consider together in determining whether or not that investment is a great investment, an average investment, or a poor investment.
That's correct. And so Kim's going to be giving some information on how she finds great real estate investments. So, Kim?
Thanks, Robert. What we're going to be talking about today, exactly as Sharon talks about the financial statement of a business, every investment property has its own financial statement attached. And so we're going to be talking about the numbers you find on a property's financial statement. So where Sharon talks about income. A property has expenses. Some of the terminology will be a little bit different, but the fundamentals of analyzing a business are very similar to the fundamentals of analyzing a property. And that's what we're going to discuss today.
And what's also important to understand, which is in the product Choose to Be Rich, which is the overall big picture fundamentals of whether you want to be a successful rich person, is the tax laws are different. So both investments, businesses, and real estate have taxes, but sometimes are treated differently in taxes. So all of these things make big differences, and they are things or distinctions you'll pick up as you become more sophisticated. So give yourself time. What we always say is study a little bit, you know, start small. Invest a little money, make your mistakes, but please take your time, because ultimately it is your education that makes you rich, not the investment. So if you're just starting out, some of this may be overwhelming, but just bear with us. It's not that hard. And the more you play cash flow, and if you have a chance, look at Choose to Be Rich, you'll begin to make sense, and suddenly you'll find that your wealth actually does increase. One of the stories I always find funny is I go to Australia a lot, and over there the government incentivizes you to lose money. In other words, when it comes to real estate, they go out there and they buy a piece of property that's losing money, and the government says, good, we'll give you a tax break for losing money. So people in Australia, and this used to happen in America also up until 1986 when the tax law changed, but up until 1986 in America, you actually got incentivized to lose money. And it never really made any sense to me, but you get a tax break for being an idiot. And what I say to people is this, how hard is it to find something that loses money? I don't care if it's a business or real estate. It's not that hard. But so many people think, well, if I lose money, at least I get a tax break. That's, in my opinion, absolutely insane. You don't want to invest to lose money. And it's one of the reasons I really don't care personally a lot of times for these mutual funds or buying and holding or just buying a stock to hold, because you know, you're just hoping the price of the stock goes up, and meanwhile you could lose a lot of money. I don't like losing money. So the point here is this, is how do you find something that makes you money? That's the purpose of this program here, is to give you some insights as how you find things that make you money versus lose money. Because any blind hog can find either a piece of real estate or a business that will lose money. That doesn't take much intelligence at all. If you want to find a business that's losing money and turn it so it makes money, that's another story. If you want to find a property that's mismanaged and turn it around so it makes you money, that makes a lot of sense to me too. But please don't go out there and find something just to lose money. That takes no intelligence. Any person can do that. So getting started over here, Sharon, would you mind give us a couple of tips, and you can follow along in your little notebook that comes with this program, on how you start to see companies or businesses that are either good or bad?
Thank you, Robert. Absolutely. As Kim said, it doesn't really matter what investment it is. There's always a financial statement, and you have income and expenses. And a business in one industry is going to have different results from a business in another. But the first thing you want to look at is exactly what you said, Robert, cash flow. You have revenues, you're selling your product, you have your gross revenue from selling the product, and then you reduce the amount that it costs you to make that product. That results in something called gross margin. That tells you how much money you have at the end of the day to run your business and to grow your business before you take into consideration any tax benefits you have. It's cash flow. It's how much money is coming in, how much money you're having to spend to create that product, and then the result is your gross margin or gross profit.
So I have a widget that I sell for $10. It costs me $5 to produce. What's the next step from there?
That means you have a 50% gross margin, and that's very good. Typically, the average gross margin is in the 30% margin area. Some go as low as 5 to 10%. Others go as high as 60%. 50%, that's excellent. Now, after that, you have your overhead. You pay for your employees. You pay for your business, your operations, your office, your rent. And that's how you calculate where you start. And that's where you can compare yourself to other businesses or other businesses in that industry.
So you're looking at the margins, the gross income, and your operating expenses. So when you're looking at a company, those are the first things you look at.
Absolutely, because you're selling a product and you have certain variables in how much you can price that product because you're competing with other companies. So you have that product, pretty much both are going to pay the same for the product. So where you have your flexibility and the control and looking at how well that business does its job is in the overhead piece. How much from gross margin actually flows to the bottom line, the net income of that company. That tells you how good a job they're doing managing that business.
And so, Kim, very similar in real estate. How do you judge, you know, the income versus expenses and how well the management's doing?
Okay, well, on an investment property, you have your income less your expenses, and that's called your net operating income. Now, your income on a property is made up primarily of three items. One is your rents. And your rents are affected by the location of the property because every town has its good areas, its bad areas, its college areas. They all may dictate different rents. Also take into account the size of the units and the type of units. Do you have one bedroom, studios, two bedrooms? Are they large units, small units? all of those items ultimately determine what you can charge for rent on your property. The second item that affects your income is the vacancy rate. Now, if your vacancy rate, which means how many units you have empty, is very low, that means that you may have an opportunity to increase your rent. If your vacancy rate is very high, meaning you have a lot of units that are vacant, then can you turn that around and increase the value of the property and get more rent for your property?
Right, the last property you and I bought was a property with high vacancy.
Yes.
And many people would see that as a negative, but we saw that as an opportunity.
Right, because we were able to turn that around.
So the point here is this, is many times, and I think Sharon will agree with this, where we make money as investors is we have to see where somebody mismanaged the asset, either whether it's a business or real estate. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. You see an opportunity in the management of the business. And it goes back to what we talk about the BI triangle and the Choose to Be Rich program. It's not necessarily the product. It's the management of the overall system, whether it be real estate or a business. You can spot opportunities where it's been mismanaged and increase the bottom line and make more money, make the business more profitable, and get a profit and be able to sell that business.
And one of the reasons mutual funds are tough, because even if you find a mutual fund that's mismanaged, it doesn't mean that you can do anything about it. So all you can do is basically sell and get out. There's very little that you can do to change the management structure to improve the profitability. So those are things you consider before you become an investor. Question number one is, how good a manager am I? If you're a very good manager of businesses, then maybe you should look at investing in businesses. If you're really good at managing property, maybe you should look at managing property. And if you're very good at managing options, you know, which is the trends, markets going up and markets going down, maybe you should be an options trader or, you know, something like this. So in finding a good investment, one of the first questions you need to ask yourself is, what's my experience? What's my education? And how good a manager I am? Because if you're a bad manager, all investments will be bad.
And that's exactly true of real estate, because, Robert, you and I love to find properties that are mismanaged, because normally then we can get it for a lower price, and we do have the team now in place. I certainly didn't when I started out, but we now have the team in place that can turn it around and make that property run very smoothly. Okay, the third point that affects your income, we call it other income. It might be income from laundry, from parking, from, you might have a recreation center you can rent out. So those are basically the three items that make up income on an investment property: your rents, your vacancy rate, and the other income of the property. The main question you want to ask regarding income on an investment property is, how can I increase the income on this property?
Because reduce my expenses.
Or reduce the expenses. Because if you can do that, then you ultimately increase the value of that property.
Again, it goes back to, how good a manager are you? Now, you don't have to be the person that does the management, but you have to be in control of income and expenses, regardless if it's a business or real estate. Right, Sharon?
Absolutely. And that one word you just said, Robert, is so important: control. When you're talking about mutual funds, you say it's low risk. Well, from our perspective, that's high risk, because we're not in control of that underlying mutual fund. You're putting your money in there, and whatever happens, happens. You have no control over it.
You're hoping that the person that has control, i.e. the mutual fund manager, has your best interests at heart, and is excellent at picking stocks and is a good manager. That's what you're betting on.
Exactly, and hoping that those financial planners that says the market always goes up 10% a year are right. But as we know, that hasn't always been true. And so as you get more education and more management skills, you can go into businesses and or real estate, and the education is what gives you the control and the better management skills.
So what you see inside your workbook here are basically a pro forma statement for real estate and a financial statement from a business. And these things you need to look at. But there are other things not found on performance or financial statements that you as an investor need to look at. And one of them is the trend. One of the first things I look at, whether I invest in a business or a piece of real estate, is, which way is this trend going? One of the reasons we're in Phoenix, Arizona, is because Maricopa County, where we live, is the fastest growing major county in America today. It has been growing that way for years. It is the fastest growing. Las Vegas is the fastest growing small city in America today. So one of the reasons we came to invest in Arizona as far as real estate was very simply, easy to say, is the trend is going up. there's other parts of America where the trend is going down. In other words, people are leaving parts of America and moving to other cities. So if you're going to be an investor, you want to find out where people are moving from and sell there and buy where people are moving to. And those trends you cannot generally find out from the Chamber of Commerce or from many commercial real estate companies that put out the inflows and outflow trends. Another way I watch trends is I go down to the local U-Haul dealer or the moving companies and ask how many people are moving in and how many people are moving out. If there's 10 people moving in and 4 people moving out, that's a good trend.
And even alongside with the trends of a city or the trends of an area, is you have a trend of a neighborhood. And when we're looking for properties, let's say in Phoenix, there's different neighborhoods. And so we look at, you know, is there renovation going on in this area? We want an area that's coming up. Is there renovation going on? Is there new building going on? Are people moving in, moving out? Are there businesses moving in? Those are all, to me, positive signs of an upward trend. And I'd want to look at that area more then.
So what kind of trends do you look at in businesses, Sharon?
Well, trends absolutely impact your business, just like they do in real estate. If we look at the technology bust and boom of the last 10 years, the trend is what impacts the value of that underlying stock. You can have two identical companies have the same balance sheets. One is set for expansion and success, the other one set for failure based on a trend. They may both have high inventory. One has high inventory because their competitor just came out with a better, more advanced product, and their product is now obsolete. Whereas company B has high inventory because they are the company that came out with a new product, and they're ready to launch it in January. So again, you have to look at the numbers, but you also have to understand the trends and the industry in which the business runs.
So when you look at a financial of a company, they could have inventory. Now, is inventory listed as an asset? You know, how do you look at it?
Inventory is listed as an asset on the balance sheet.
But if it's obsolete inventory, it's not worth much.
That's right. And what happens is that's where you start getting into this funny money stuff with accountants these days, because the business owner is not going to want to show that obsolete inventory as an expense, because then you'd have to write it off and their revenues get erased. But a true accountant that comes in and looks at that from a generally accepted accounting principle will say that's obsolete inventory and you need to write it off. But that's where it's even more important, Robert, to understand the trends, because what's obsolete to me may not be obsolete to someone else. And you have to look and say, is this company going to be able to survive? Are they set for the future, or are they still living in the past?
Which brings up the point is, would you say that you should know something about the industry you invest in? For example, somebody like me who knows really nothing about computers or technology, you know, one computer looks just as good as the other. So if I don't know good inventory from bad inventory, would you say that that might not be a good way for me to invest if I don't know what's good or bad?
I would wholeheartedly agree with you, Robert. Not everybody would agree with that statement. But for instance, my husband, Mike, and I, he is a patent attorney and an intellectual property attorney, and I'm an accountant, and I like the systems side of things. So we regularly look at and invest in young technology companies because he's educated in the technology world. He can look at something and understand the value, whereas I can't. So it's the combined skills of me looking at the numbers, him looking at the technology. And so, yes, the more you know about the industry, that's why you and Kim excel in real estate. The two of you can look at a deal and in 30 seconds know if it's worth pursuing.
Yeah, it's called the sniff test, because we've looked at so many deals. You sniff it, either smells bad or it smells good, and you almost know instinctively and intuitively. The other thing I invest in are oil and gas, because my background is oil and gas, you know, working for Standard Oil, shipping oil and gas, and also gold. I've been a gold bug since 1971, and I understand the markets of gold, how it's mined, and things like this. So if you're going to invest, and if you don't know anything about the industry, the first thing you want to invest in is some information or some experience into the actual industry. I don't invest in stocks and computers simply because I wouldn't know a good computer from a bad computer.
And it's also the vocabulary. You understand the vocabulary of real estate. You understand the vocabulary of oil and gas. Michael understands the vocabulary of technology.
Electronics,
and
yeah.
Yeah, that's how you educate yourself, is getting and understanding that vocabulary. Again, the importance of Rich Dad's Games, Cash Flow 101 and 202, is we teach the vocabulary of money.
And just as there are so many different industries, there's also so many different products in the world of property investment. You've got apartment houses, you've got retail commercial, you've got warehouses, you've got mini storages.
Raw land.
They all take a little bit different tact, a little bit different analysis, and they all have their own vocabulary.
Now, in real estate, the value of your property is directly related to who your tenant is. So if your tenant is Goldman Sachs, your property is worth a lot more money than if your tenant is somebody who can't pay their rent.
That's correct.
Always remember that it is your tenant that determines the value of your property.
That's absolutely correct.
The other part I want to say about how you find a good investment is you'll probably make a lot of mistakes at the start because you yourself may not know what's good or bad. So that's why we always recommend starting small. But I'd like to share with you an idea of where you want to go to. When I look at a piece of property, if I can't make 100% on my money, I don't even consider it. And where a lot of times people try and make their money in property, especially, and it happens in buying businesses, is they try and be cheap or they lowball the person. So here's a property for $1 million, and they don't want to pay $1 million, so they offer $700,000 for it. And they think that's really smart investing. That, to me, is really... It's smart, but it's kind of lame. If you really want to be a great investor, you look at the property. The seller's asking $1 million or $100,000, whatever it is for it. Your question should be, how do I turn that $1 million into $2 million? That's your question. If you can do that, it's a good investment at that price. But if you look at it, it's $1 million and all it's worth is $1 million. So you try and buy it for $700,000. I mean, that's kind of a waste of time because you're only looking at a 30% margin there also. So when we look at businesses, in businesses, it's almost like, you know, 1,000% sometimes. If I see a product, you know, can I get 10 times that? Can I get 100 times that? That's what I'm looking at. Can I get 1,000% times that? And most average investors, when they look at investment, they look at the price versus its underlying value. And so somehow when you look at a piece of property, which is most easy for most people to look at, ask yourself this. If it's $100,000, can I make it $200,000? You know, if it's a business, can that business grow 100%? And if it can, then it's a worthwhile business. And the way you find that out is basically by trial and error, you know, going, thinking creatively, looking outside the box. Like Sharon's son, Philip. Philip works with the Rich Dad Company. It's one of the best people we've ever employed. And I said to him the other day, I said, the reason you're not finding good real estate deals is you're looking for real estate deals you can afford. If you're going to be good in business, whether it's real estate or business, if you're going to be a good investor, whether it's business or real estate, you have to see value that somebody else doesn't see. So I told Philip to take a run at one of Kim's properties, which is a $2 million property. His job is to look at the property and figure out how he's going to take that property to $4 to $5 million. If he can do that, he'll see value that Kim doesn't see. And that's why he'll become a rich person in his life. But what most investors do, they look at the price versus the value or what the future use of the value is. For example, a farmer may look at a piece of raw land and see that it's valued as $10,000. A real estate developer will look at that same piece of raw land and see that $10,000 property really worth $1 million if he or she puts, you know, new houses on it and develops the property. So a farmer has one value for it. A real estate developer has another value for it, same piece of land. So if you're going to be a successful investor, it's not the price. It's the ultimate end value. Can you change the use? You know, can you take an apartment house and change it to condominiums? You know, that's how you make your money, not by trying to be cheap and lowballing and doing all those herky-jerky types of things. You really have to look at it as an investor and seeing future value, not current value. Any comments on that, Sharon?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think when you look at a piece of property, it's what your experience and what your background is how you can grow that property. A mortgage broker would look at a pro forma differently than Kim might look at the pro forma. And it's that education and learning from each of that and having the right members on your team, because it's not up to just you. That's what's so valuable about the Choose to Be Rich program. It helps you form your team so that you can get the input from your attorney, from your tax person, because when you look at the price, that's only one piece of information.
When a tax accountant looks at a piece of raw land, they don't see much there. In fact, they might see
They don't get very excited at all.
They don't get excited about it. But if a tax accountant sees that you might build some property on it, build an improvement, an apartment house on it, they also get a little concerned because the tax laws are different for a builder than for a investor. Now, let's say the same tax accountant sees a building on the same piece of property. All of a sudden, they get more excited because the tax laws really favor a piece of property with a fixed improvement already upon it, which you can depreciate. So your accountant, which is in Choose to Be Rich, is so important at looking at the tax value of either the business or a piece of real estate. Is that correct, Sharon? As a CPA, isn't that true?
Absolutely. And that's one of the factors that when you see the price, you have to look at the tax impact to understand what the true value is. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Is there any tax advantage to buying a piece of raw land?
In a word, no.
Not really, unless you have some future views for it.
Right. The tax advantage is how you're going to incorporate and invest that land. If you're just going to hold it, no, there's not a tax advantage, because you cannot depreciate raw land.
Right. Now, if I'm going to build on that property, do I get the same tax advantages as somebody who already buys a fixed building?
It depends on whether you're building once or if you build on a regular basis. Are you a builder by trade? If you're a builder by trade, that's considered ordinary income. If you're building as an investor and it's a one-time thing. So the standard accounting response, Robert, is always,
it depends. And that's why in
Choose
to Be Rich, you'll find out the emphasis on having the right team, the accountants and the attorneys. So please look at Choose to Be Rich, which is probably our very basic fundamental product for anybody who chooses to be rich. It's the complete, you know, foundation for people who want to be rich. If you just want to make a quick buck and, you know, buy a property and flip it, you don't need Choose to Be Rich. But if you actually plan to build your wealth upon a strong foundation of either businesses or real estate or stocks, please look at Choose to Be Rich, because it is about the foundation. So, Kim, continuing on, what do you have to say about finding a great investment?
All right. Well, I want to go back to one point that you made, Robert, which I think is so important, which is starting small. Because when you're talking about, you know, what you can, how you can ramp up a property from a million to 10 million, I hear people sometimes say, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy these 100 units and condo convert them. Well, have you done that before? No, never done that before. So the key, one of the keys really where you're going to get your experience is starting small. I started with a little two-bedroom, one-bath house in Portland, Oregon, put $25 a month in my pocket, and I started learning on that. Then I went to other single-family homes, and sixplex, and 12-plex, but that's where I got my experience. And when you talk about, we call it the upside on a property, where can you really improve the value of the property? What's the upside of the property? So much of that comes from experience and actually doing it.
And we more than 10 times our money on those properties, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And the reason we more than 10 times our money on those investments was very simply because the market in Portland, Oregon had crashed at that time. So we would put in like $5,000 and walk away with $50,000 about 2 years later. So those are the types of investments you look at. So we took in the trends, but also look at the numbers. The areas we're buying were great areas. So all of these factors come in, but the numbers are important, but you need to look outside the numbers and get the experience. And the more experience you have, the richer you become. If you're just doing this for the quick buck, you may as well go to Las Vegas and play blackjack.
And you say you have to look outside the numbers. It reminds me, just last year, I got this pro forma, which is basically a projected financial statement. And the numbers just looked fantastic. I was so excited about it. And I just thought, yes, this is the best deal I've ever seen. And I drive to the area, and it was a slum. I mean, there's couches and there's motors in the front yard. There's houses with no doors or windows. And I'm like, hey, it looks really good on paper, but there's a few other pieces missing.
And what was missing with that property, it could have been a good property, but it was an area that was still going down. It wasn't coming up. If it was a bad property in an area that was improving, then that would have been a find. So then that goes again to the area or the trend of that area. The same happens in business. You have to look outside the property, look at the ongoing trend.
That's exactly right, Robert. We've talked about this in Choose to Be Rich, where you're looking to solve a problem. And that can apply whether it's real estate or a business. If you see a problem that can be solved, you can impact the bottom line and increase the value of that property, whether it be real estate or business. You can't do that in a mutual fund, but you can do it in your own business. And that's why when we talk, and Kim is absolutely right when she talks about starting small in real estate, it's also a good idea to start small in business. We talk about starting a part-time business on the side so you can learn your mistakes, and those mistakes are little. Or better yet, play the game's cash flow, Rich Dad's game, and learn with paper money.
Another way to find great investments is take on great partners. For example, we have Ken McElroy, who's with a leading property manager in the Southwest United States right now. So he becomes our partner very simply because all day long, while we're looking at Rich Dad's business, he's looking at property on a regular basis. So he is on the pulse of the great deals. So Sharon, you and Michael are part of the Arizona Technology Board?
Yes, we're members of several organizations, Robert. One is Licensing Executive Society and also Patent Law Association, Michael is a member of. And that helps us stay on top of the trends and new technology so that we know, just like I know Kim gets subscriptions to apartment owners' magazines, and she stays on top of the trends in the area that she's investing, just like we need to stay on top of the trends in our area, or else you might invest in a company that already has been outdated and you're the patsy, not the investor.
So by being part of these organizations, like Kim is part of the Multi-Housing Association, she goes to hear firsthand what's going on in the industry. So Sharon, by being part of the technology industry, she hears of the up-and-coming new companies, which you can invest in also. So that's part of how you find the great deals, be it business or real estate, is by being an insider in the industry. So we find it by having Ken McElroy, who's looking at property all day long. That's his business, and he lets us know where areas coming up, areas coming down, and the good deals coming back on the market. Is that correct, Kim?
That is, and it's a really good point. How do you find a great investment? Is there's so many resources out there. For instance, the Multi-Housing Association. I hear seminars. I deal with other apartment owners. I learn from vendors. I find out what's happening, who's buying what, where. So there's a ton of resources in all these different organizations for business, for real estate, any type of organization you're involved in. There are so many resources in the people that are actually out there doing it.
So what you want to do is have partners who are in the industry. The other way we find great deals is we have brokers. Like we have the number one real estate broker in Arizona as part of our team. And Sharon knows the best, you know, business brokers and bankers in town who know what's going on in the industry, what's coming on, who's making money, who's losing money, who's bringing a new CEO. So those are the areas that it's information is what you're dwelling on, right, Sharon?
Absolutely. It all comes down to networking. And if you prove yourself in a given area and you have the right network and you have the right people, you're going to hear about a deal before somebody else does. It's like seeing an article in Forbes and then investing in a company. The money's already been made. The insiders have already invested in that. And you're kind of getting on the train at the last stop. So you want to get on the train at the beginning of the ride. And that comes through education, networking, and knowing the right people. Again, you don't have to know it all. You just need to know who to call.
And who's already inside the insight.
And know the people that are going to call you to let you know a great deal starting.
Right, to let you know there's legal inside information and there's illegal. We highly recommend legal when we talk about insight.
And I'm sure, Sharon, it's the same for you. Many of the properties that Robert and I are buying are never, ever listed. We usually find out because of our relationships with our brokers and other people in the industry. That's where we get the inside.
Absolutely. They know that you are sophisticated. They know you know the market. They know the markets, the properties available. They recognize that this is going to save them a lot of money. If they offer it to you first, you say yes. They don't have to go through the effort of advertising it and listing it. They save brokerage fees. It gives everybody a win. But that's, you know, some people get frustrated because they say, well, then why, you know, I'm never going to be able to get into it. But you can. If we can do it, you can do it. It's just a matter of starting to get involved. Educate yourself, start to network, start to get to know the people that are the major players, and find out how you can get to know them and be part of their inner circle.
Some of the other points I look at is this is financing. One of the reasons I really don't like mutual funds is because I've got to use my money. And I would rather use somebody else's money. So the reason I love businesses or I love real estate is other people's money. And you can get a higher return the more you use other people's money. So when you look at real estate, you can go to the banker and you say the property is $10 million. If it's a great property and you have a good business plan for the property, it's easy to get the $10 million. Now, I ask most people who have the save and get out of debt mentality, how long would it take you to save $10 million? For most people, it would take quite a while. So a person can get ahead faster by investing in assets that bankers will lend you money on or investors would love to invest in a business on. That's what the stock market is about. If you find a good business with a good management team with great growth, the stock market will give you all the money you want. So you have to look at a factor called leverage. How leverageable is the investment? Mutual funds are made for people with a saver's mentality. So you put your dollar in and it sits there. The other aspect of investing is how insurable is it? When I buy a piece of real estate, I'm required to have insurance on it. When Sharon buys a piece of property, you want to make sure there's insurance on it or the right corporate structure on it to protect it from lawsuits and things like this. The trouble with buying a mutual fund is ask your insurance agent this: will you insure my 401k or my mutual fund from catastrophic loss? The answer is no. Ask your banker if he or she will lend you money to buy mutual funds or stocks. The answer in most cases is no. So the other aspects when looking for good investments are, who will give you the money for it? If nobody wants to give you the money for it, maybe you shouldn't put your money in it either. So those are some of the aspects of investing that you can look at. So in closing, Kim, quickly go over some of the other points you have as far as looking at real estate.
Okay, and just to reiterate financing terms, that is such a crucial part of the equation, because how your property is funded and how much that debt is going to cost you goes right to your bottom line. It goes right to your cash flow, which of course is your income less your expenses less your debt. So the type of financing you put together, that the interest rate, all of that is a crucial part of the equation. The one other piece I want to talk to, which of course is very near and dear to my heart, and we've touched on briefly, one of the number one reasons that Robert, you and I buy property is because of the cash flow. And the cash flow, again, it is simply your income less your expense less your debt. So that figure always changes as you're doing your due diligence, as you're looking at how to increase your income, how to decrease your expenses, how to get the best financing of terms. That's what affects your cash flow.
Well, this is a very big point, because most investors don't invest for cash flow. They invest for capital gains. And what capital gains is, you buy a stock for 10 and it goes to 15, you have a capital gains of 5. To me, that's gambling. I don't like to do that. When I invest, I want cash flow. In other words, putting money directly in my pocket, which is measurable. And I want capital gains. And I want tax advantages. And I want to use my banker's money to invest in it. Those are all requirements I have, which takes some training to get. But you get those things, you make a lot more money from your investment. By just putting money in a mutual fund, in most cases, there's not much cash flow. And if there is, it's a very low percentage. For example, you know, what's Microsoft paying, a 1% dividend or something like this? I mean, that's not that exciting. It's very easy to get a 29, 30, 40, 100% return if you know what you're doing from cash flow. So that's why you need to know there's between cash flow and capital gains. And most people are invested for capital gains. When they, you know, they buy their house, they say, my house went up in value, that's capital gains. The trouble with that, you don't know how much it really went up until you actually sell the property. So as an investor, you need to know whether you're investing for capital gains or cash flow. I invest first for cash flow and then for capital gains. Most people just invest for capital gains, which to me is gambling. It's like going to Las Vegas and putting money on the red and rolling.
Okay, so the other item you mentioned was a return on your money, and we call that a cash-on-cash return on investment in real estate. So for example, if I put $10,000 down on a property, and at the end of the year, I've got $1,000 going into my pocket, that means I've got a 10% return on my money. And that's always a crucial number that I look for as I'm doing my analysis.
And what most people do when they invest money in mutual funds, they put $10,000 in there and they get no money back, but then they call you up and say, well, you've had a capital gains of $1,000. Well, that $1,000 gain is fictitious. You know, it doesn't really belong to you until it hits your pocket. And that's the way you want to look at it. So that's the problem with people investing in capital gains versus cash flow. When people are investing in mutual funds, in most cases, they're investing for capital gains. So Sharon, when you invest, what are you investing for?
As an investor, you're looking at both pieces, cash flow and capital gain, but you need to know which one you're looking at. And it's that same $10,000 you're talking about, Robert. If I have $10,000, I can park it in a mutual fund, dollar for dollar. I have the opportunity to buy a piece of real estate where that $10,000, the bank will loan me $90,000, so I can get a $100,000 property for that same $10,000 investment, and I own it all. So instead of owning $10,000 in mutual funds, I own a $100,000 piece of property.
And if it goes up by 10%,
it's all mine.
Yeah, well, 10% of $10,000 mutual fund is $1,000. But if it's 10% on $100,000 in property, you've made $10,000. So that's the power of using leverage other people's money when you're investing. But the question I have is this: when you're investing in a business, you're really looking for multiples far beyond 10% returns, aren't you?
I'm looking for infinite returns, because you can invest $10,000 or you can invest an idea into a business and create the ability to get that cash flow back from sales, and you make an infinite return.
So for you, the idea of getting 100% or 1,000% or an infinite return is realistic?
Every day.
Kim, is that realistic for you?
Yes, it is.
And so when somebody tells you a 10% return is good, and if, especially if it's only a 10% capital gains on paper, what do you think about that?
That they should put their money in mutual funds.
But that's not a good investment, right?
No, it's not. That they don't have the education to know how to make those larger multiples. They need to put their money where somebody else can manage it.
I'd like to share one of the main reasons I believe most people don't find great investments. And the reason they don't find great investments is they actually think you see investments with your eyes. You do not see investments with your eyes. You see investments with your mind. So you must train your mind to see what your eyes often cannot see. Let me give you an example. I have the benefit of traveling throughout the world. And no matter where I go, people say to me, well, you can do that in America, but you can't do that here. Or even if I'm in America, people will say, well, you can do that in Phoenix, but you can't do that in California. What blinds people to great investments are the words, you can't do that, or I can't find that. What you need to do is train your mind to see what your eyes often cannot see. For example, I was in Australia with my friend Kelly Ritchie, and we were walking through this little country town. As I walked through the town, I said, my God, this town is vibrating. It's alive. It's coming up. It's big time. It's still a small town, but I could feel the energy of the town was picking up. And I said, I'll bet you we can find a deal that'll make us $1 million today. So rather than saying you can't do that here, we went to look. So we walked down several stores. We walked through several real estate shops, and we finally walked into one where the real estate agent walked up. She's an attractive young woman. She says, what are you gentlemen looking for? I said, I'm looking for an investment that'll make me at least $1 million in a year. She says, I got one for you. So I said, well, take me to it. This took a minute. We drove up the street. There it was, a property. And I took a look at the numbers. It was a 7-unit apartment house, an extra old house attached to it, and 2 extra acres attached in the back of it. She says, all you have to do is build 2 more units back there, and you'll walk away with your $1 million in a year. And I said, good. And my friend Kelly Ritchie bought it. So the point here is this. Everything's in front of you if you will look for it. What we saw was a brand new built apartment building with only 7 units in it, but it had 2 acres in the back. Also, the property that was attached to it, the older house, could be sold for $500,000 since it was on another piece of land. The point I'm making is this, is not to tell you to go to Australia to buy property. The point I'm saying is this, is opportunity is always in front of you, but never say you can't do that here, or I can't find that, or great investments don't exist. By saying that, you block one of your greatest assets, which is your mind. If your mind is closed, so are your eyes. So train your mind to see what your eyes cannot see. So there's a lot to learn on the subject of investing. And the more you practice, you know, even if you have no money today, start looking. Start looking at financial statements of businesses. Start looking at performance of real estate. It doesn't cost you any money. It just costs you a little time. The first thing you want to do is invest some time. Invest some time in your education. Hang out with people who are professional investors or people in the industry. Don't put up your money right away. You know, so many people say, I have $10,000. What should I do with it? The first thing I tell them is keep their mouth shut and don't tell people you have money, because if you have $10,000, you don't know what to do with it. There's always somebody that does. So before you invest your money, invest some time and money into your education. It's the best thing you can do. And after a while, you'll start seeing investments and opportunities all around you, investments and opportunities that most people haven't developed the eye or the nose for. In closing, I'd like to say this about the subject of investing and finding deals. At first, it's kind of frightening because you don't know what you're doing, and it's a little frightening sometimes to risk your money. But with a few ups and downs, and trust me, you'll definitely lose some money along the way because we'll all make mistakes, but we learn from our mistakes. The point I'd like to drive home is this, is once you learn the game, it's one of the most fun games I've ever played in real life. There's nothing more fun than finding investments and getting richer and richer. It sure beats going to work every day. So have fun. That's the most important message. So thank you for listening to this program on how to find great investments.